Welcome to the Mentoris Project podcast, covering mentorship, books, and more. In this podcast, we interview the authors of a new series of books where we meet the men and women who mentored Western civilization. This is Dr. Roseanne Welch. For more information, visit mentorisproject.org. Today, our guest is Joseph Klein, author of Building Heaven's Ceiling, a novel based on the life of Filippo Brunelleschi, the Italian designer, engineer, and mathematician known as the founding father of Renaissance architecture and the creator of the dome of the Cathedral of St. Mary of the Flower in Florence, Italy. Thanks for joining us today, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dr. Welch.
Yay! I'm going to start with the question I always begin with, which is, why do you think Brunelleschi matters to us today?
Brunelleschi's impact on today cannot be understated at all, because he literally started the Renaissance. I mean, the notion of the Renaissance, meaning rebirth. He was the one, him and his comrade, Donatello, the sculptor, they went to Rome, rediscovered all the artwork that had been lost that the Romans had done, and basically brought that back to life. He is the brains behind the Renaissance, if you will.
And then why do you think the Renaissance matters to us?
Brunelleschi's work, obviously, the work he did with the Duomo over in Florence is impressive and still stands to this day. But even some of the more subtle achievements he had, he doesn't get credit for, such as the reverse gear, the crane, linear perspective. I mean, when you look at art before Brunelleschi came along, it was all very 2D. If you look at works of art by Duccio, the Madonna and Child, it's very 2D, flat on the page. But when Brunelleschi shows up, he creates linear perspective with vanishing lines, a vanishing horizon, and it completely redefines Western art.
I would agree with you that that's something that is still of importance to us today and helps us build. But also the Duomo is fascinating because of its architectural prominence. And as you said, it still exists today. What did he do that was so special about that?
Before Brunelleschi came around, the predominant style of architecture was Gothic. Gothic cathedrals, where you see with the flying buttresses coming out for support. And what Brunelleschi did, he wanted to dispel all the extra parts of the church, such if you look at like Notre Dame, it's got the crazy flying buttresses that come out and it takes up a whole lot of space. You don't really have that much space in Florence. And throwing the fact that the Duomo was actually, well, not the Duomo, but the actual cathedral itself was started about 80, 90 years before Brunelleschi was even born. And so by the time Brunelleschi was born and he grew up in Florence, he's walking around with his family and everybody in Florence would see the giant hole above the main part of the cathedral because they never had finished the dome. So basically it was a giant sunroof in the church that stretched for about the length of a football field. And if it rained, it would rain in their church, which obviously would not be a great thing. Obviously, they wanted to finish it because the giant opening was an eyesore in all of Florence. And it kind of came down to how they were going to do it. With the height and the length of the opening, it would have taken centuries and centuries of just growing timber for the supports, because in order to make an arch, you have to have the wooden framework to kind of hold everything into place, and hopefully everything dries in place and doesn't fall. And if they were going to do that at the Santa Maria, they would need literally more wood and timber than they probably had in all of Italy at that time. And everybody that wanted to build it, they were like, oh, we're going to use all this wood. And obviously they couldn't. But then you get Brunelleschi, who, and this is actually one of the pivotal parts of his life. When the city of Florence established a committee to try and pay somebody to finish the opening, everybody required lots of timber for the wooden supports, except Brunelleschi goes up there and he asks the committee to try and balance an egg on its end. And so he gives them an egg and they're trying to balance it. Nobody can do it. And then Brunelleschi is like, y'all are idiots. This is how you do it. He grabs the egg, slams it down on the table, and I'm blanking out on the historian's name, but there was an art historian who documented the Renaissance about 2 centuries after Brunelleschi. And the way they described it in the actual Italian, the translation means Brunelleschi broke the egg's butt. And so by slamming the egg on the table, it just broke the very bottom of it, and in doing so gave it support to stand. And that's kind of was the inspiration for to build the dome. And one other the things that made it really interesting is at this time, it was very cutthroat, if you will. You had all these other artists buy in for contracts, and everybody's going to try and get one up over the competition. And because of this, Brunelleschi was extremely secretive, and he would always write in code, almost like Da Vinci would later on. Mm-hmm. And he would keep all of his plans to himself until he really, really had to divulge something to the committee. Then he would show just the bare minimum, if that. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we don't really know how he built the dome. And so by looking at it now with the engineers, we can go back and kind of see his mindset. And he was a genius and then some. Mm-hmm. Just the building techniques he utilized. Those techniques were not seen in Europe for at least over 1,000 years.
That's so amazing. I mean, I knew that about him, but just imagining that idea that someone could break through and reinvent something or rediscover something that had been forgotten is brilliant.
And I mean, even though obviously Brunelleschi is known today as an architect and engineer, at that time he had never really built anything by the time he got the commission. And so the reason he got the commission after doing the egg stunt, he was the only person who did not need a gajillion trees and timber. And so just because of, you know, frugality, the committee gave it to him.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and obviously there were some bits of contention with it because everybody on the committee obviously has their own favorites in terms of art or artists and who they sponsored and all that. And his arch enemy, Lorenzo Ghiberti, actually was placed in a co-project manager, I guess, for the cathedral. Mm-hmm. And him and Brunelleschi absolutely hated each other because it actually, their rivalry stemmed years before when they were both in their teenagers. They vied for another committee to design the doors on the baptistry in Florence. And ultimately, Ghiberti would end up winning. And because of that, that is what drove Brunelleschi out of Florence and into Rome, where he basically became a glorified grave robber. Oh. Allowing him to rediscover all the Roman art ideals that had been lost.
That's brilliant. And that's so interesting because one of my questions is always, who were his competitors at that time and how did they measure up to him? So tell me more about this rivalry.
The first time Ghiberti and Brunelleschi actually met, it was, as I said, in the contest for the baptistry doors. And they actually still have both works of art that both artists submitted. And what's really crazy is they both chose to do the exact same biblical scene where with the sacrifice of Isaac. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because when you look at Lorenzo's piece, it's very flowy. It obviously is an unbelievable work of art, but it's all, if you study it, you're like, okay, you have Abraham about to stab his son Isaac, and neither one of them really shows any emotion in the entire scene. Yet when you look at Brunelleschi's, he actually incorporated humanism into it. And so you see the look of that look of anguish on Abraham's face as he's about to put a knife to his son for God. And because of that, it was almost like Brunelleschi was too far ahead of his time.
No one understood it or expected to be shocked by that emotion.
Yes, ma'am. Exactly.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, that's so interesting. And that is what the Renaissance was all about, and what Roman art in its own way was about, the passion of their world and all of that. Mm-hmm. So tell me, what do you think in his childhood set him up to be this innovative and this much of an artist?
Well, his background obviously is not like a traditional artist. When you look at somebody like Raphael, who came up in the art world, you know, always churning stuff out. Brunelleschi's actual background was precious metals and metal making and jewelry. And because of that, it kind of gave him a different eye when building stuff. He focused more, obviously, on making sure it looked nice. You know, everybody wants to see something that looks nice, but making sure it would work. Throughout his life, while he was building the dome, there were so many impediments he had to face. And through his ingenuity and intellect, he was able to circumvent those obstacles. For instance, he realized when they started transporting the bricks up to the top to start building the dome, it would take too long for the oxen. They would have to take the oxen out of the lifts, put them back in, and then have them basically go in reverse to get the whatever it is, the objects that come down, mm-hmm. as opposed to going up. Brunelleschi saw that the time constraint on that, it was, he couldn't deal with it because it would take hours to change everything. And to accommodate this, he invented the reverse gear. Nobody in history had ever thought of a reverse gear before.
And what exactly is that?
Basically, similar to kind of like how what we have in our car, you know, if you put the gear in reverse, everything's going to just move backwards, okay. as opposed to having to take the oxen out, put them back in the other way and hope that they keep moving. This would let the oxen just stay and move in one general direction the entire time, and they would be able to control the flow of objects, whether they were going to go up or down, just with a simple pull of a wooden block. And once you get all the bricks up to the top of the Duomo, you're going to probably have some problems transporting them. And so because of that, he came up with the first ever rudimentary crane to place everything in position. And then even the shape of the bricks, of the design, it's really interesting. In English terms, we call it herringbone, but over in Italy, they call it the spine of the fish, because the way he put the bricks on top of the dome, it's different because it was more of a zigzag pattern, allowing the weight to disperse as opposed to just being on one particular brick where it might fall. The zigzag pattern is much more stable, and because of that, the dome has never fallen.
And it's also visually more interesting than if they're all stacked up next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Interesting. So tell me, if he was working in metals as a child, is that what his parents came from? Or what were his relationships with his parents, and how did he learn what he knew?
We do know some facts on Brunelleschi's life. We do know he had both parents. We know his dad was a member of, I believe, the Wool Guild.
Yes.
That existed for sure. But then there were a bunch of open spots, you know, where we don't really know that much about his childhood. So it did give me a little bit of free rein mm-hmm. to imagine his life. And so because of that, obviously, with his dad being very successful, he would try and emulate his father's footsteps. And obviously, his dad would want him to go into the family business, but he wanted to do other things. And upon losing the contest to Lorenzo Ghiberti for the baptistry doors, that was kind of the moment where he was like, okay, I need to go do something on my own. And that's when he left Florence, went to Rome, rediscovered himself along with all the Roman ideals, and came back, basically was able to change history for the better.
That's beautiful. And it's true, being that these are works of historical fiction, we do have to make up some things. So it'd be interesting to find out what scene or moment that you did make up did you enjoy writing the most, and what were you trying to say with that moment?
In the novel itself, I've focused primarily on the relationships between the fathers and the sons, because obviously you have Brunelleschi with his dad. You had Donatello, and supposedly his dad was a drunk, and so I incorporated that into the novel. And then also the big sponsor, if you will, for Brunelleschi was Medici.
Of course, and they are father-son story too.
Exactly. And so I found it, I kind of wanted to touch upon the different relationships you can have between a father and son. And obviously for this, I made like the Medicis, they're very close. Obviously their family was very close. For Brunelleschi, it was more kind of like the rebellious son, if you will, because obviously his dad wanted him to succeed in his footsteps. Brunelleschi wanted to do something else. And yes, they did care about each other, but there was still probably some resentment for Brunelleschi not following in his father's path, if you will.
Correct.
And yeah, but I chose those three characters. That way you have every relationship possible, because Donatello and his dad hate each other. Medici and his dad love each other. And then you have Brunelleschi and his dad, where it's kind of a bitter relationship, but not, it's not too bad, if you will, or at least the way I wrote it.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. That's an interesting disparity of stories, right? And it's a little bit Goldilocks, right? Too much, too little, yes, and just right.
Exactly. Yes, ma'am.
That sounds very fun. Did you have any impressions of Brunelleschi before you took on this job? What did you really know about him before you started researching?
I knew nothing. I knew he designed the Duomo, and that was it. And as soon as I actually started the research, it was unbelievable how much one man created. And I guess in Italy, everybody knows about him, because if you're in Florence, obviously the dome's the biggest thing you see in the city. But outside of Italy, it literally seems like nobody knows who he is. Like when I would tell people I'm writing about Filippo Brunelleschi, they would have no idea who that was. And it's kind of sad, because when you look at his history, I mean, I don't think anybody has left such accomplishments like he has. And there were finished accomplishments too. It wasn't like Da Vinci where, you know, he would work on something and go do something else. I mean, if you look at the dome, you see Brunelleschi invested decades into building that.
So how, if it took decades to finish and to prove that his concept was correct, how did he then do other work or gain other trust for other work if they didn't have a final product?
He actually used his good friend Donatello to help change the naysayers' minds, if you will, by building a miniature dome. That way he could show everybody in the model how he intends to build it. And that really helped, obviously, change some of the dissenters that didn't think he could do it. And then he also went around and took a few other commissions while that was building, such as he designed the orphanage there in Florence. I'm blanking out on the name of it, but he was the first one to really use kind of columns in an outdoor sense that were not more decorative columns as opposed to a structural column.
So tell me, did you find any themes that ran through his life, or that you had to invent a theme in order to hold his story together?
I focused a lot on the family relationship. Coming from the South, obviously, for my family, family is huge. And in Italy, you can say the same thing about, you know, Italian families are close-knit and all that. And so I wanted to really kind of focus on the role of family and friends to an extent, because I do have Donatello in there as well as his like best friend, more of like a bumbling sidekick, if you will. But the role of family, I think, is without a doubt the most important theme.
So does that moves into my next question, which has to do with what made you prepared to write about this man? What from your background connected you to his story?
Mr. Barbera actually was like, "You're writing about Brunelleschi," and I was like, "Cool." And it did give me the chance to research him. I love the research process, and that just going through literature, watching documentaries, it really opened my eyes to see how much one man could do.
I love that as a theme as well, the idea of how much you can achieve in a life if you focus and study and work hard.
Yes, ma'am.
So who would you say, perhaps besides his father, who was Brunelleschi's mentor in his career?
Whoever built the Pantheon in Rome. He was obsessed. When he was in Rome, he was obsessed with that structure, because at the time it was the largest dome structure in the world. It was made completely out of concrete, which to the Italians, Brunelleschi's time, it blew their mind how they were able to do something like that. Just build a giant concrete dome. And Brunelleschi used that pretty much as inspiration to build the Duomo in Florence.
Excellent. Excellent. Then on the flip side of that, did he mentor any students that may have become other people we know or that did other work that we know about?
Not really. Not to the level of prominence that he had. I mean, I guess obviously everybody's heard of Donatello, the sculptor, and their lives are intertwined in more than one way, if you will. More likely, they were lovers, even though nothing's really written about that. And obviously, I think that role on both of them helped each other. For like Brunelleschi mentoring and tutoring future people, not nearly as much as you would see later on by other artists.
Interesting.
He was very secretive. Ever since the whole fiasco with the Baptistry Doors competition, I think that kind of put a mark on Brunelleschi about being so secretive. The fact that his main opponent at that time did the exact same biblical scene he did on a golden plate, that would kind of make him untrustworthy of many people. And outside of his select circle, he would not tell people anything. He would keep everything secret until the last minute, if he even had to divulge that. But
so it would be difficult to mentor someone because you couldn't give them your secrets. That makes perfect sense.
Yes, ma'am.
Interesting. So what happened to his rival later in life? Obviously, we don't know his name nearly as much.
He primarily did more of the goldsmith. His work is still on the baptistry doors over there. The golden plates he did for showing scenes from the Old Testament. But one of the funny stories is when Brunelleschi got the appointment to build the dome, Ghiberti also was the co-project manager.
Right.
And obviously they hated each other to the point where Ghiberti tried to get Brunelleschi arrested for basically employing non-union workers. And that obviously pissed off Brunelleschi to the point where he either was sick or feigned an illness and let Ghiberti kind of like take control of everything. And while he was in charge of building everything, it just went, it all went horrible. And so because of that, Brunelleschi got Lorenzo kicked off the committee or the dome building project. And he was able to kind of take over himself and do everything he wanted to.
That's brilliant in many ways. That's another piece of brilliance. This has been a fascinating conversation. I know that there have been a couple of books specifically about the Duomo, so it's very interesting to go into the life of the man who made it happen. So that leaves me to my very last question, which suits the concept of the whole mentors project, which is, who would you say in your life are your mentors?
Let's see. I love ancient history. And because of that, I really like Hannibal Barca, who fought against Rome in the Second Punic Wars. Here you have a guy who, at the time, not even his own country, the Carthaginian government did not even believe in him. And yet he goes takes it to Rome. In one battle, he killed more people than had ever been killed in one day, and those numbers would not be replicated until the 20th century. Goodness. And I mean, I really like Hannibal just because motivation. He knew he was losing, but he just kept going, one foot in front of the other. Other people I really admire, let's see, Darwin. I really admire Darwin because when he did come up with On the Origin of Species, mm-hmm. at the time he had been studying to be a priest. And here he comes up with this scientific theory that could completely destroy the world that he knows. And he set on it. And eventually he published it. And that really did change the world. But, you know, it took a whole lot of self-reflection on Darwin himself to put his theory out there.
Quite true. He didn't want to suspend the truth. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Well, this has been quite a charming conversation. I'm so excited for people to read the book and to learn more about the time period. And of course, to listen to this conversation and learn more about why you undertook this project.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Mentors Podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Roseanne Welch. Our music was composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch, and Kathleen Childress designed our website. For more information and to read more about the great mentors in history, visit mentorsproject.org and join us for our next conversation.